Former astronaut and U.S. Senate candidate Mark Kelly is in the Gila Valley today. He stopped briefly to talk to Gila Valley Central about his Senate campaign, his political views, and his experience as an astronaut. I noticed, as I said before we started the interview, that you switched your political party from independent to Democrat within the last year or so. And tell us a little bit about that and maybe why you're entering the Senate race.
Well, sure, I was a registered independent. I think independence is important. You know, we've seen, you know, previously seen United States senators here in Arizona show a lot of independence. You know, individuals like John McCain, who, you know, for me personally was, you know, one of the guys I looked up to. I'm a Navy pilot, say, you know, similar to Senator McCain flying off of aircraft carriers. So I think independence is really important. In making a decision to run for the United States Senate, you know, I've been a public servant my entire adult life. I've served in the United States Navy for 25 years, 15 of it at NASA as the you know, the pilot and commander of the space shuttle. And when I made a decision to run for office, you know, I look at you know, where our country is today and some of the decisions that's being made, you know, at the highest level, and I don't always agree with them. So, you know, and some of these values, you know, issues like, you know, being able to, you know, keep your health care if you have a pre-existing condition. That's the case for about 2 to 3 million Arizonans. Or being able to, you know, stay on your parents' health care plan if you're under the age of 26. You know, those are the issues that, you know, resonate with me. I think those are really important things that the majority of Arizonans agree with. So in making a decision for to run for office, I registered as a Democrat.
Excuse me. And your wife, of course, is a Democrat. I wondered if that had any influence in it. I was actually surprised.
You know, she was a Republican before she ran for office.
Was she?
Yeah. So she switched from being a registered Republican in about, it must have been, you know, I don't know, maybe 2003 or so would be my guess. But when she decided to run for office, she registered as a Democrat as well.
That's interesting. You know, in Washington, the flavor in the past couple of years, almost, I mean, it's just nothing short of nasty almost between the way the politicians are behaving. And it's not just on the, you know, on one side. It almost seems like both sides just can't come to an agreement. What are your thoughts on that and what can be done?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, the partisanship and the polarization that we see in Washington, D.C., you know, has resulted in, you know, D.C. has basically failed Arizona and the other states. I mean, they're not able to govern this country in the way it should be governed, where individuals from both parties reach across the aisle to do what's right for the voters and for, you know, the people that they represent, everybody. So, you know, that's my intention. You know, if elected, I'm going to try to be, you know, independent from not only political parties, but from corporations. I strongly feel that one of our biggest issues that we're constantly trying to overcome is the amount of corporate money that goes into the campaign accounts of so many members of the House and the United States Senate. So when I announced that I was going to run for the United States Senate, I announced in mid-February of this year, I made it very clear I'm not going to take corporate PAC money. It's kind of unusual, not unique. My opponent, on the other hand, takes corporate PAC money into her account. And what that means is, to some extent, you know, somebody who does that, you might feel that they might be influenced by these corporations. It's a problem with our political system and the way we fund campaigns, and it needs to be fixed.
So you touched on health care, and I noticed on your website that, for obvious reasons, gun control is an issue. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that issue.
Well, I'm a gun owner, and I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I think people have a right to own firearms if they, you know, if they want a gun to protect themselves, or they're hunters. I'm a hunter. I don't get to do a lot of that lately. Or if they're, you know, target shooters, or they just like to collect firearms. I probably own more firearms than your average Arizonan. At the same time, we have 40,000 people get shot and killed every year in our country, another 100,000 shot and injured. And it's clear that allowing individuals to buy firearms without a background check doesn't make a lot of sense, doesn't make sense to me. We can strengthen our gun laws in a way that most Arizonans support, in a common sense way, and we can protect people from gun violence without infringing on the Second Amendment rights of responsible gun owners. That's clear.
Now, you say that they don't, there's no universal background check, but when you go to buy a gun, they do a check of some kind, do they not?
I mean, depends on where you buy it.
Okay.
And it depends on what state you're in. You know, as an example, you know, here in Arizona, if you go to a federally licensed firearms dealer, you know, that could be Walmart, could be your local gun store. They're all federally licensed, and you do have to get a background check. And that ensures that somebody who is a felon or a domestic abuser or is otherwise prohibited from owning a firearm can't buy it at that location. The problem is that individual can then go down to the, say, the local county gun show, right? Might be at the convention center or somewhere else. And, you know, in Pima County, you know, this thing, you know, one of these happens rather regularly, or over the internet or through a private sale without a background check. And that's just wrong. And there are a lot of firearms that are transferred without background checks.
Mm-hmm. So why is it that people can go to a gun show and buy one without a background check?
It's because there's no federal law that requires it.
So they missed that when they made the background
check.
Right.
It's a big loophole that you can
drive
a truck through. It is a big loophole. Some states have closed that loophole. But the reason why we need strong federal legislation is, and you see this in, let's say, the shooting that happened in Gilroy recently, that individual would not have been able to purchase that firearm in California, but was able to buy it in Nevada.
Yeah.
So we need strong federal legislation, and you know, these things are just so, you know, it's common sense legislation. That'll protect people and reduce the number of people shot and killed. The states that have some stronger laws have less gun violence. And we can do this in a way that's just very common sense.
So what do you say to people who are afraid of these gun laws? Because, you know, frankly, what you're talking about makes sense. I mean, nobody wants somebody crazy on the street with a gun. But there's a resistance to pretty much any laws.
That's true. I mean, there are individuals that are often worried about, they'll talk about the slippery slope. Like if you pass this piece of legislation and then you're going to pass this one and then you're going to go from there. They don't like that. You know, let me just say that, you know, Washington, D.C. has a very hard time passing any legislation. You know, so the concept of one thing leading to another, at least, you know, politically today is not like a real thing. And you know, somebody like me, if I'm elected as somebody who is a gun owner and a supporter of the Second Amendment, you know, my job would be to make sure that that doesn't happen.
So you're in the area, you're in Graham County, I guess you're going up to Greenlee County. What's on your agenda while you're here?
Well, I was just over at the community college. That was a good visit, learned some of their issues that they have with the federal government, met some of the students. I'm going to go to a couple local elementary schools here, Metcalf and Solomon Elementary School. Meet some of the kids, talk to them a little bit about, not about politics, but about space. Try to get them interested in science and math. That's really important, not only for Graham and Greenlee counties, but it's important for the state. It's important for the country to have young people interested in science and math and have them go into careers in engineering, you know, in science, these, you know, more technical fields. And then I'm going to go over to the Mount Graham Regional Medical Center to continue to learn more about healthcare and how, you know, the healthcare system in Graham County, how it's supporting, you know, folks that live here in this county, and what are some of the issues that the administration at Mount Graham Regional Medical Center, what do they have to deal with, and what are some of the challenges that they're trying to overcome with the federal government? And if elected in November of 2020, I've got to be, you know, as ready as possible to try to address these issues for citizens of Arizona. When I travel around this state, or when Gabby and I travel around the state of Arizona, we hear from folks all the time that they're prescription drug prices have gone up sometimes 300% in a year, and they have, you know, no way to pay for it and no explanation as to why. And they're really scared that they, because of how somebody votes in the United States Senate, that they might wind up losing their health care coverage for them or one of their family members because they have a pre-existing condition, you know, as an example. And mm-hmm. they're concerned that, you know, the deductibles for their health care or their premiums keep going up every year. And in some time, you know, sometimes you hear that, you know, their wages may have not risen in a generation. So these are issues that folks in Graham and Greenlee County are thinking about all the time. And if elected, it's my job to address these issues.
Now, are you finding as you go around the state the same challenges in small communities as there are in large communities as far as healthcare, or are they different?
Yeah, I would say it's pretty similar. What folks think about. I mean, they're thinking about the price of their prescription medication. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it might be what their parents, who are elderly, have to pay, and now they can't afford it. And it's not only their parents have to figure this out; it affects the children.
Right.
And because the children have to help, well, maybe it affects the grandchildren. Maybe the grandchild doesn't get to participate in some sport because their parents have to help, you know, their grandparents with, you know, paying for their prescription medication. And the federal government is just certainly failing, you know, on this issue. We should be able to provide good health care coverage to all Americans that they're not going to lose if they get sick, that they can get if they have a pre-existing condition. That's clear. But unfortunately, everybody in the United States Senate does not agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you said, it's tough to get things passed.
Right.
Now, in the few minutes we have left, you are a retired astronaut, which is a really cool thing. How does that shape your perspective in all of this?
Well, you know, I've had a chance to serve our country, you know, in an airplane, flying in combat, but also in space, and working with not only folks from, you know, different backgrounds, but often different countries, different political systems to solve really hard problems in a way that really respects science and data and facts. And I often see Washington, D.C. not getting that, you know, not paying attention to what, you know, what is factual and what is the data support. So my experience as the commander of the space shuttle, you know, I think is pretty transferable to the United States Senate. You know, solving hard problems with people from other sorts of backgrounds. and if elected, by the way, pretty sure I would be the only person in the United States Senate with a graduate degree in engineering. Mm-hmm. Pretty unusual.
Yeah. I was going to mention that you've got a master's degree in aeronautical engineering. Is that correct? Do all the astronauts need that kind of background? Because I know Neil Armstrong had it, and then, you know, the ones that I'm familiar with.
Well, as the pilot or the commander of the spacecraft, you know, like I was, like my brother was, you often see that those individuals have a background as a test pilot in the military. Mm-hmm. I was a Navy test pilot. Neil Armstrong, he's a little bit different. You know, he left the Navy and became a civilian test pilot,
right,
flying essentially for the Air Force, flying for contractors. We also have a lot of astronauts that are scientists and engineers. They sometimes, or especially among the scientists, have PhDs in some kind of science. And then similar with the engineers. We also, the astronaut office also hires medical doctors. Mm-hmm. We even had one veterinarian, a guy named Rick Linehan. Once it was a big animal vet, but we don't carry any big animals up into space.
Yeah. So there was this study done with your brother where he spent, what, 340 some odd days,
right,
in space. And
a long time.
They used that to compare the differences in your DNA and things. What came out of that? What did they find?
Well, since we're both astronauts, and were identical twins, you know, NASA took an opportunity to do some science after I left. You know, I was at NASA for 15 years, but this was after I left the space program after my wife, Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, was shot and injured. My brother was still there, and then he did this 340-day mission, nearly a year in space. And they compared the changes in our microbiology and our DNA, chromosomes, those kind of like very, you know, basic changes. They looked at things like the length of our telomeres, It's a kind of an obscure thing. It's the caps on the end of your chromosomes to see, you know, what would happen to the length to the lengths there. They looked at gene expression. Some of my brother's gene expression, and gene expression is what are your genes actually doing? You know, they might be the same as mine, but some might be turned on or working harder. Mm-hmm. And his gene expression, you know, a lot of it changed. And the stuff that changed, a lot of it didn't change back after he got back. So he had some significant changes in his DNA that occurred during his 1 year trip to space. Now we'll see over time, is this, you know, what does this manifest itself in? You know, he thinks it's going to give him some future superpowers.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm not so sure about that.
So they haven't seen any detriment in these changes?
Well, he really struggled for about a year after he got back. I mean, it took him about a year to recover from being in space for a year. So we learned that the prospect of sending somebody into space for 2 or 3 years, you know, we've got to figure out how do you mitigate the negative effects of that. I would say today he feels perfectly fine, and he doesn't know what the long-term consequences of that year in space are going to be.
So the challenge, was it just from weightlessness that, you know, his muscles atrophied, or what kind of challenges did he?
Yeah, it's not only the zero gravity, but the other issue is the radiation.
Oh, yeah.
You get a significant amount of radiation. The dosage you get each day is equivalent to about 10 chest x-rays.
Wow.
Every single day for a year. And you got to figure that has, you know, that's going to impact your body at a very, you know, basic kind of molecular level, cellular level.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So he'll be good. And this this is going to allow us to send people to Mars someday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I guess if elected, you're going to kind of take on this mission to Moon they're planning, because there's also opposition to that.
Yeah, you know, we're always changing direction in our space program.
Yeah.
You know, usually the next president or a new Congress or a new NASA administrator wants to do something else. You know, these programs take a long time.
Yeah.
They're very expensive. I think it's important to kind of stay the course. We've got the greatest scientists and engineers on the planet. If we set our mind to something, if we set a goal and have a plan and work really hard, you know, we can achieve great things. We saw that in the 1960s with Apollo. We saw it again in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s with the first flights of the space shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
Space shuttle program lasted for 30 years. You know, I was the last commander of Space Shuttle Endeavor. I got to, you know, park it for the last time. So we can do, you know, these remarkable things if we're allowed to just kind of stay the course and get the funding we need to do that. So I hope, you know, that's what we'll do in this case.
Right. What's one thing that you would want the people in this area to remember of you being here? If you could pick one thing that would stick in their mind, what would that be?
It would be that I'm a public servant. You know, I come from a family of public servants. My parents were both police officers. My grandfathers both served in World War II. I served in the U.S. Navy and at NASA. And, you know, we've got serious issues that I don't think Washington, D.C. is addressing in a smart way. And the polarization and the political parties are just kind of out of control. And we need folks that care about independence. You know, we started with this. You asked me, why was I an independent? That's why I was an independent. And now I'm a Democrat. But I'm going to try to, you know, bring back you know, this sense of independence and representing Arizonans in not beholden to any company or political party when I get to Washington, D.C.
Well, thanks for being with us today, and I wish you well.
Thanks for having me on, Dan. Appreciate it.